Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. Today we get fresh with the latest and freshest information in business technology with Australia's most respected futurist and business technologist, Steve Sammartino. We also chat with leading business brain, Barry Markoff, and Telstra's own Peter Bennett Hullen, who all reveal their top secret tips and advice to demystify tech talk. Today's show is made possible by our loyal friends at eView Real Estate. Our first guest is Australia's most respected futurist and business technologist, Steve Sammartino. Welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Now, I have to also ask you, as a futurist, what does that actually mean? Like, did you have a crystal ball and predict the future, or how does it work?
A lot of people ask that. I think the first thing is you're not allowed to call yourself that first. Other people have to start calling you that.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, I think if you come out and say, I'm a futurist, then people say, well, what makes you a futurist? But over time, I would look at technology and business strategy and how things were changing, and people kept asking me about that. Oh, can you come and do a talk about this and focus on that future stuff you do? And then you end up becoming that because of the things that you do and the work that you've done that shows that you have an understanding of where things might go. So if anything, the history of what you've done and what you've done in the past is the thing that makes you a futurist. And as most good futurists around the world tend to say, is that to become a good futurist, it's more about understanding consumer patterns and understanding the impact of history on what the potential behavior of people will be in the future. Because I often say that humans, we've got like a software operating system, right? Just like we have in our computers. I call it the human OS. And ours hasn't been updated in 200,000 years. So, which was when we became Homo sapiens, right? Yeah. And so what that means is that our behavior won't change that much. Just the tools with which we operate our behavior on top of will. And so the best thing we can do is understand human behavior and then the capability of the new tools and then put them together. And so I've just had a habit of doing that. And then people have started to put me into that futurist category.
And you're a futurist with a difference, though, aren't you, from other people that call themselves futurists?
Yeah, so rather than just focusing on technology and what might come next, I'm really interested in the economic and social impact. So my background is economics and finance, and I've always had, you know, a liking of technology. I, you know, wrote my first lines of computer code when I was, you know, 10 years old on an old Terrace 80 16K RAM computer. And so over time, what's happened is those two interests have just merged. So I worked in business for a really long time in marketing and strategy with, you know, big global corporations.
So you were coding at 10.
Yeah.
I have to go back to that. I can't ignore that. Oh, okay. Because that's a big red flag to go. That's not usual for a 10-year-old to do.
No.
How did that come about? Your parents were in IT?
No, not at all.
How did that happen?
It was when personal computers first started to become available and affordable. So I think I remember our first one was a Tandy TRS-80. And it was 16K Tandy. RAM, and the coding language that I would code in was BASIC, which is still a fundamental code that the others work on. And there was a big book that came with it. It was 300 pages, and it taught you how to do basic little games and programs. And I just was interested in it because I started playing video games like Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, and I was like, well, how do you make these things? How do they get on the screen? And then I started talking to people and finding out, and I got a computer and just started playing with it. But then, you know, I forgot about it. Like, I did it for about 5 or 10 years, and then, you know, become a teenager and you move on to other things. And then when the web came back, I really started to get excited again. So I was almost like I had a comeback. It was there. I did it for a period of time and then, you know, went on to other things and then came back to it.
So when you're at school, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. No, seriously. I mean, I think, you know what? It's really interesting that you say that, because I don't think you should have a thing you want to do. There should be a lot of things that you want to do. And I think the more that people can overlap the different things that they want to do and then leverage one into the next one, and then you take these little skills and then you go into the next career, almost like a little Venn diagram where you just develop different things, that's the best way. I can't even remember what I wanted to do. I just was pretty naughty and got in trouble a lot. And so I just wanted to finish school and not get in trouble.
Well, since you have finished school, you've worked in business infrastructure. This is incredible, incredible credentials for those listening wondering who is this person, Steve Sammartino. He's worked in business infrastructure, technology, the web. He's worked in startups, marketing, advertising, consumer goods, business writing. You've been a university lecturer in marketing. You're a professional public speaker and corporate advisor. You're a technology venture investor founder. Incredible resume. You're a co-founder of Sneaky Surf.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about Sneaky Surf.
Yeah, so up on the peninsula here. Yeah, so I've been surfing since I was maybe 12 years old. And I just love it. And I've finally found a way where I can link together a passion and some skills that I've got. So we started a network called Sneaky Surf, where it's, in simple ways, it's a little bit like a crossover between a Facebook and an Instagram for surfers. But what we do is we check in when we're going surfing. So it has feeds from the Bureau of Meteorology when the waves are going to be good. All our members get alerts on where they want to go. If you go surfing, you drop it on a map on where you're going, and your mates nearby get pinged on where you're going for a surf, so we all connect together and chat about surfing. So, and it tracks all the places you went surfing.
Yeah.
So you have like a diary of all the places. It tells you when the waves are going to be good. And we just connect and share it socially on what we're doing with surfing. But we've also built some software that tracks how you surf on the wave. So it shows the movements of the board on the wave. So we'll be releasing that software on the Apple Watch pretty soon.
I was going to say, so do you have to wear your Apple Watch while you surf?
We will do, yeah. So the new Apple Watch is waterproof, and we've been waiting for that. That's handy. We've been building the software in the background. So not just the social side of the surfing and the having a surf diary, if you like, and a history, but what we want to do is track the actual movements of your body and your board so that you can improve your surfing and look at your surfing afterwards. So that's what we do. It's called the quantified self movement. So people who use Runkeeper and those types of things, where you track your performance, human performance, that's the kind of era that we're going into, bringing surfing into technology.
That's really exciting. Now tell us, speaking about exciting, all this business technology is exciting. Tell us about Tomcar.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, Tomcar's an incredible Melbourne-based business. It's a startup that sells all-terrain vehicles. And so they're probably the world's best all-terrain vehicle. Mm. Can really go over any territory. They're manufactured here. Actually manufactured in Moorabbin down here with MTM, which is a local first-tier auto manufacturer. And the cars are mainly for – they're not registered for the road. They're for mining, rural agriculture and so on. So it's a startup that manufactures the cars locally and designs them locally.
It's interesting because, we hear so much doom and gloom about the automotive industry in Australia, with Holden and Toyota and Ford. But there are other elements of automotive that it was ripe for disruption, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the business model that Tomcar has is one where we can manufacture it on demand. The cars are modular in the way that they're manufactured, and they're high value cars that last a long time and have a specific purpose. I think one thing that people confuse is that there's no way Australia can compete on a macro global scale with efficiencies of manufacturing in a high-cost labour market.
Yep.
But what we can do is very well-enabled niche manufacturing for premium markets and products. So it's not that manufacturing can't survive here. It's just that we need to have a different version of that manufacturing, and high-end manufacturing with specific purpose, well-designed, robust products is the type of thing that we can do rather than scale. And that's sort of a lot of people are calling it manufacturing 2.0. And even the UK has done very well with their premium cars and Aston Martins and so on. So it's a matter of just shifting the mindset on the volume orientation to a quality orientation and specific purpose manufacturing. So that's what Tomcar does.
Now, you've been heavily involved in quite a few startups.
Yeah.
What do you see the future of startups? Do you see it growing as quickly as it has been, or is it just peaked and then it will sort of plateau a bit? Or what's your view?
Look, we haven't even seen the start yet. That this is the start of the start,
right,
and all of the important technologies that will change our lives in the next 50 years haven't even been invented yet. So let me tell you why the start of the start. So the car came 150 years after the start of the Industrial Revolution. Right?
Yeah.
We're only 20 years into this one. Right? We're only just getting the technology in the hands of the people. Like, half of the world aren't even on the internet yet. And this is a connection revolution. It's actually not really about the technology. It's about the way we use the technology to connect with other people's ideas, with other people's thought patterns, the way we reorganize assets. That's what the internet does. And we're only just realizing its full capability. If you look, most of the things are really just, social connection and information transfer. Wait until we start getting heavily into 3D printing and nanotechnology and all these areas. Really, it's burgeoning just now. One thing that is interesting, though, is that Australia, I think we didn't get we're a little bit behind the world because we didn't really have a dot-com boom like America did. What happened was a lot of the old money in Australia invested in the very first disruptive startups. So realestate.com and seek.com and car sales, a lot of that, there was investments from, you know, Fairfax and PBL and the Packer family and so on. So we didn't get any new money to build an ecosystem. And it's only now where we've got Atlassian and a few other companies going for their IPO, you know, freelancer.com, that some new money is starting to come in and you're seeing co-working spaces pop up and venture capital arms. So I think we're going to see in the next 10 years a lot of that growth, and we do need some improvements in government policy because there aren't that many incentives for small business at the moment.
I can't agree with you more with that. I think the it's a form of ageism in a way, the older.
It really is. Yeah, no, you're right. And it's protectionist. Can't afford it. It really is protectionist, yeah, because the threat is that these startup businesses will disrupt existential business models and potentially change the employment infrastructure. And so the government, let's be honest about it, the thing that they want is full employment because that reduces their financial risk on transfer payments. And so by enabling new employment, it actually can, in the short term, work against the government, and so they don't set up the right incentive structure. But it's inevitable, right? You're better off pushing forward with the inevitability of change in the type of employment that we're having, and startups are really creating tomorrow's jobs. Yeah. That's why we need to be more focused on it.
I think there's a real misunderstanding of the word disruption. So you talk about disruptive technology or disruption in business, and a Gen Y or the millennials will go, yeah, I understand what that means. You say that to a Gen X or a baby boomer and they go, it's a disruption, it's negative, it's more of a negative connotation. Right. Have you found that in your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a scary word. If you think of disruption, it is a scary word. You think of buildings falling down, right? That's the kind of mentality that we have.
Yeah. And it's not scary, is it?
It's not. No. Well, it's just new opportunities and changing of revenue streams.
Yeah.
I mean, disruption's going to happen, right? It's inevitable. The reason that we're afraid of it is that we had relative stability in the post-World War II era for, you know, 50, 60 years where business systems were well known. We knew the business model, make it in a factory, put it in a retail store, advertise it on TV, go out and sell it, rinse and repeat. You know, it was the TV industrial complex of business and employment. Mm. And now that stuff, the world has become flat because anyone can get anything from anywhere at the world's best price and not even have to advertise it or sell it in a retail store or even have a local factory.
Yeah.
But that actually creates a whole lot of employment opportunities. That creates opportunities for rural and regional areas. Do we have to live in the city if we can telecommute?
Yeah.
You know, this is an opportunity to actually give our rural areas a chance to, you know, thrive again. So
I think
for me,
it's
exciting, but it's just an attitudinal
exciting
thing.
It is an attitude because people don't understand it. So what they don't understand, they automatically go to the fear side of things.
Of,
but Steve, if you can hold that thought, because I want to continue this really fascinating discussion as we take you on a magical mystery tour to demystify technology for your business with our special guest, Steve Sammartino. And joining us is one of Australia's leading business brains. He's the CEO and founder of ICMI Speakers and Entertainers, Barry Markoff, welcome back.
Thank you very much. You've invited me back after 2 years, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, no,
so,
always remembered, never forgotten.
That's fantastic. That's great.
Now, tell us a little bit. You're the 30th year in business with ICMI.
Yes.
That's incredible. And you would have seen an enormous change in that.
There's been so many changes over the years, how it all started. I guess when we started 30 years ago, it was a real cottage industry.
Mm.
And Max Walker was sort of doing the $500 talks, you know, to organisations and clubs and things like that. And then it really, I guess, the first 5 years, it really started to boom. And everybody has seen the importance of communication and getting their staff involved and being motivated and teaching them about business and things like that. So it's changed so much, like unbelievable.
And I know that Steve's on your client list.
Yep.
How often do you do the speaking engagements, Steve?
Oh, I don't know, more than one a week, I would say.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yep. But what I found fascinating is that, you know, 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, that people, well, you'd go to breakfasts and lunches and people would speak. And now there seems to be a trend towards staying in your office and watching webinars. And I thought to myself, well, maybe your industry is, you know, becoming irrelevant. But you're saying it's
no,
the opposite?
No, what it is, it's changing all the time. Like 20 years ago, there'd be nothing for Steve. Because of what's happened the last 5 to 10 years, what happened, people used to use an economist. Right, economists aren't used anywhere near. When I go and speak to clients, they'll say, look, we had an economist a few years ago, but we want a futurist. because Steve is the person that teaches them and tells them what's going on. And he can also add his economic and financial advisory as well, because he's so good in that area as well. But the people like Steve are in the big demand compared to economists who they're not in the demand they were just say 10, 15 years ago.
And people still want to hear someone speak live and not stream them online or look at a webinar?
There will always be opportunities for people to get together.
Face-to-face.
People love being together,
yeah.
Right? And they just love that networking and communicating with each other and that sort of thing. And if you look at conferences and events, they have gone through the roof so much. I was at a conference end of last year, and there was somebody, I think, from Ernst & Young that said that they're building another 100 hotels in Australia and it's not enough for the conference and leisure market. So there are just events. If you go down and you look at any hotel, you'll see the number of events that go on every day, whether they're 10 people, 500 people, or 1,000 people, it's just got out of control. And you look at even the travel, even people that have these conferences, travel has gone up like 10% as well because of conferences and leisure market and things like that. But conferences are becoming huge as well.
Steve, do you think, in your experience, and we talked earlier on about it's almost neuroscience and how our brain works as humans and our behaviour, and do you think maybe this rise in digital technology and the use of it has then done the opposite? It's because we're naturally social animals, it's increased, or the rise of the conference or the rise of the face-to-face.
I actually do, and I think I do, and I don't think we've even seen how much it's going to influence.
Really?
And go that way. Yeah, humans have this wonderful way of when things aren't right in our gut, we just know it and we change stuff around us. I think we became so isolated in our cubicles, and the communication, we had so many tools where we could not have a true human interface, you know, looking at our screens, you know, I call it the screen culture era,
yeah,
that we've responded with that need to get together physically.
Yeah,
and I actually think it'll even increase, because I believe that offices will shrink. So all of this, you know, the corporate head offices that we see, instead of people going to them 5 days a week, they're going to work out that there's major cost benefits in making them smaller and cooler and groovier places that we go 1-2 days a week. People are going to have self-drive cars and live in Torquay or down the peninsula, wherever they want to live, away from the city where it's, you know, more peaceful and nice. And they'll come to the offices those 1 or 2 days a week. And I think we'll see more events and more conferences for that social facilitation,
yeah,
that face-to-face interaction, those, you know, exchanging ideas, and more cross-fertilization too.
Yeah.
You look at co-working spaces. The reason they work is because,
yes,
not everyone's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? You get stuck in that same industry, same people, same thinking. You're missing out. So I think we're going to see offices shrink, more events, more face-to-face, almost as a counterbalance to that screen culture.
I like that, because the mobile office or working from home has its obvious efficiencies, yeah, but it can also be lonely.
Yeah, it's isolating. The first startup I had was me, you know, on my kitchen bench with my laptop, and it was damn lonely. I knew everyone in the local cafes because you just want to have that interaction.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that we will have the work from home stuff, but we're going to see little micro offices pop up in, you know, more sort of areas out of the city, not just co-working in the city. And you'll see more events, and even the event market, people going to meetups at night now. You know, if you go to meetup.com and see all the different events in different industries, that's really growing.
I think also what's going to happen as a result of how the workplaces change, you will see a different type of leader as well. I went into Swiss Vitamins this week, and their CEO, Radik Sully, is just amazing, and everyone's so relaxed, and he's got such a great culture there. And the thing about these new leaders, they're so humble. The guy from Boost Juice, Scott Minnelli, Guy Russo from Kmart, even Luke Beveridge from the Western Bulldogs, they're real amazing, humble people. Leaders of 25 years ago were completely different to these guys.
Oh, right? That's interesting.
And it's just an incredible new leadership that's coming through.
Now, speaking of leadership,
yep,
ICMI, is you've got an event coming up for the C-suite, haven't you?
Yes. Well, what
next
we've done,
year.
We've found that people love to hear keynote speakers like Steve and a few of the other people, but they also sometimes, or they often, want it to be expanded. And they want people to come in for a half day or workshop or do a full day or do consulting on a regular basis. And the people that make the decision for those areas are more so the C-suite people, the CEO, the general managers that need more, want more substance. For example, what we had at Kmart, a guy called Steve Simpson, who talks about what's called UGRs, unwritten ground rules. It's all to do with culture. And Guy Russo, the CEO of Kmart, saw him and thought, that's brilliant. And because in 2009, their culture was right down the bottom. Mm. And with Steve Simpson going through the organisation, he changed that whole culture along with other things, but he was one of the key components and got it to where now it's top of the range in culture.
So if people want to see some events, they can go to the ICMI website, which is icmi@icmi.com.au. Yes. That's easy, isn't it?
Great.
And also, you've started a speaking school as well.
Yes. What people have sort of come to us and said, look, so many people have to present, whether they're salespeople or now what Steve was saying before about people in smaller groups, they might put someone in charge of five people. Right, because and what happens, that person who's in charge of five people still has to present, and they have to be better at their presentation skills. So what we're finding, this which is it's a full day course. If you look at people at 8:30 in the morning when they start, they do a presentation, how they do it now, compared to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it's just cheese and chalk. And there's people not only people who are in the workplace, there's people that have come to this who are chairman of international operations who say, look, I do a lot of presentations. I need to be better at what I do. We have salespeople there that need to present to clients and things like that. So it's a conglomerate of everybody that comes to these sort of things, and it's a real growing area.
Oh, well, it is. It makes sense. If events are growing and meetups are growing, everyone's got to speak, don't they, at some point?
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, just one thing on that. I mean, it's interesting. The first thing you do when you leave school is a truncated public speaking test, otherwise known as a job interview.
Yep.
So I would say that this is something that kids need to take more seriously because we're in a world where people are highly qualified. You know, the thing that wins you the game is how good you are on the lip.
Yep.
And so, you know, doing public speaking as someone who's leaving school, is don't just think of it as something for corporates either.
Exactly. Now, Steve, you're about to launch a new book called The Great Fragmentation.
Well, I've already launched The Great Fragmentation.
You have launched
it. No, that one's out 2 years. My next book
What's
called
your next
The Lessons
one?
School Forgot, and it's How to Survive a Tech Revolution, and I'll be finished writing it on Monday.
Yeah, your deadline. I know you've got 10,000 words to go.
I know. I've got straight after here. I have to start typing again.
And so to tell us a bit what that's about,
new book. The first book, The Great Fragmentation, was all about all the technology changes. So that's the technological landscape. This one is, well, what am I going to do about it? And so it goes through three things. It goes through the revolution, revenue, and reinvention, because we don't teach money at school. You know, we don't teach people about business at school. It's almost like this unwritten taboo. Oh, don't talk about money. We're here to teach you how to get a job so you can fit into, you know, the Adam Smith factory of the last 200 years of the Industrial Revolution. This book teaches people the truth about money, how to invest it, how to spend it, how to accumulate it, what skills get paid the most, and entrepreneurship. So I call it the two missing E's in STEM. You've heard of this STEM stuff they're talking about. Science, technology, engineering, maths.
Yeah.
Well, I love STEM. Don't worry about that. I'm a technologist. I love it. But STEM won't get us anywhere.
No, it's a very right brain. Where's the creative element to
100%.
That?
100%. So I say what we need is to add the two missing E's, and then we spell esteem. That's what we need. The two missing E's are economics and entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
You can have all the STEM you want. You'll have all the garage heroes out there with all their technology. If you don't know how to get it to the market as an entrepreneur and understand the economics of bringing an idea out of the laboratory or the garage, we're not going to have any new jobs. We're not going to have any new industries. So that's what this book's about, teaching people how to reinvent themselves.
And your website that people can find more information about your books?
Yeah, stevesammartino.com.
Great. We'll put a link to our Facebook page on
that. Can I ask Steve a question? Steve, The Great Fragmentation, which you wrote 2 years ago, are there parts of that are out of date?
No. Actually, you know what?
It's a good
Some
question.
Some of the stuff, that is a great question. I'm so glad you asked. It makes me look awesome. Yeah. You know,
you're a futurist, that's why.
The stuff that's in there now is just coming true. So I wrote this book in 2013, and I predicted that we would have smart bathrooms and smart toilets, and Google just 2 weeks ago, I got a patent approved for their smart bathroom. So all of the stuff that I put in there, there's not one thing in there that I'm not proud of, and still a lot of the things are yet to come true. So if you're a bit behind The Great Fragmentation, 5-star rating on Amazon, you can steal it on the internet, you can buy it, you can do what you want. I just want to get the ideas out there.
Yeah, we're going to talk a few more predictions on the other side of this break. But when we come back, we'll be talking with Peter Bennett-Hullen from Telstra to find out what Telstra's doing. And I'm sure, Stephen Barry, you've got have a lot of questions for Peter on what Telstra's up to. We are talking about the latest, hottest technology in business. And we're also talking about the future, not only what's happening right now, but also what's going to happen in the future and how that's going to affect your business. We have here a great supporter of RPPFM and Taking Care of Business and friend of the program, Peter Bennett-Hullen from Telstra. Good morning.
Top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning to you. Now, what's happening down at Telstra? What's the latest? I haven't been in the shop for a long time.
There's a lot going on down here at Telstra, particularly on the Mornington Peninsula, but right around the country. But NBN is clearly a big focus of ours coming up over the next 12 months or so. I think there's about 40,000 premises, households going live and businesses going live on the peninsula in the next 12 months.
That'll make a huge difference.
A lot going on, particularly for business, around what that enables companies to do and businesses to do. So
yeah. I should also, as part of my intro, say that you are the best number one franchisee in Australia, Rosebud and Mornington. Well, you won. It's true, isn't it? 2 years in a row?
2 years in a row. Yes, we were very fortunate to win a couple of awards for Telstra.
I don't think you're ever fortunate to win awards. I think it's based on merit. But anyway, moving on.
Yes.
What else is happening at Telstra besides the NBN? What else?
Well, I think the interesting...
Some new apps or something?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the technological advances, and I've been listening to you guys talking about collaboration and the importance of that connectedness between businesses and between people working remotely in the same company. And I think that there's a lot of stuff that's going on, particularly in the app space and the mobile workforce space at the moment, that's really starting to drive not only efficiencies in how businesses operate, but that blend between in-business, on-site and remote working. There's a lot of stuff happening in that space, in the app space, bringing that technology to enable people to connect but still be remote and still be out on the road and still be working productively. So there's a lot in that space at the moment. Apps like Blue Jeans, which is a video communication app that delivers that sort of remote meetings type technology, video collaboration in a really cool mobile device-based lots of stuff in terms of how people can connect more effectively remotely. So, and I know you guys were talking about the importance of connecting. So these are the sorts of apps and sorts of technologies that are facilitated by something like the NBN to create a really connected business that still works remotely.
The NBN, the importance of it just can't be understated. If you look at any rich country around the world, what you see is one thing is rich infrastructure. Rich infrastructure creates a wealthy country, and the NBN, we need it, you know, like water, if we want to thrive and be a modern economy. And I think about that connection. You know, virtual reality is going to be incredible. I don't know if anyone here has had the experience to put on the Oculus Rift or any of the virtual reality. I mean, it will be to the point where you cannot tell in the next 5 or 8 years if you're in the same room with someone or not. So the potential that that creates for business, for retail, you know, shopping in, you know, you could be in the world's greatest shopping center in your own lounge room, virtually shopping, picking things off the shelf, you know, with haptic suits that, you know, tell, you know, it feels like you're touching it as well. You know, this is, and so the NBN is so important because like I said earlier, we were only getting to the precipice of some important technologies. If we don't have the pipes that can send the information down, then we could, you know, become a backwater. So that's why this is super important.
Yeah, I think particularly our geographical location makes it even more important, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, and if you take that extension, I know you were talking about earlier about the fact that people are moving to the, you know, peninsula and these sorts of areas to have that blend of lifestyle. We've seen a massive shift in that down on the Mornington Peninsula in terms of what we're calling sort of telecommuters. They might spend 3 days in the city working in head office and 4 days out on the peninsula. The ability to utilise the technology that's available to maintain their touch with their business, but also that connectedness with their people, is really important. And NBN is one of those critical pieces to the puzzle, as is the 4GX capability over mobile, because not always are you in an environment
if you're in a coffee shop where you want to connect.
That's right. So that ability to have that high-speed data connection that facilitates the connection to other places and other people, I think is absolutely where technology plays a really critical role in supporting that business connection.
Yeah, I like what you said there about the 4GX as well, because people say, should you have wireless or should you have the NBN? It's like saying, do you want trains, buses or cars? And you want all of them, right? Mm. And I use my phone tethering when I'm traveling all the time, and I live my life on planes. I always just use my phone to tether, mainly because I don't trust other people's Wi-Fi, but that's what I use as well. And everyone I speak to at these conferences, they tell me how you travel a lot. Yeah, now I'm only doing 2 days a week in the office. I'm working from home. I'm telecommuting. And this is where the government needs to get really clever with spending the money on the infrastructure, because on the one hand, you think, the NBN or other infrastructures will cost too much. But you know what I say? There's nothing wrong with the Westgate Bridge. The problem is that everyone goes to work at the same time, right? So if the government had incentive plans to have more people work from home on certain days for the corporations through taxation, we could save billions of dollars on road infrastructure, put that into digital infrastructure. We can have our cake and eat it too, and facilitate better lifestyles where people can pick their kids up from school and have some room in a backyard and fresh air. This is the type of thinking we need.
Exactly the sort. And the discussion, the platform, thanks to Taking Care of Business, we can have that platform to have this discussion, because I think it's critical, really critical. Now, we talked about Apple Watch, to go back to this new, Sneaky Surf?
Sneaky Surf.
Sneaky Surf, I like that.
All you surfers get on it, Sneaky Surf
on
the App Store.
You surf, Pete, don't you?
I surf.
Yeah,
I haven't surfed for a long time.
Haven't you?
I used to surf. I have that surfy look, don't I?
You look like a surfer. You totally look like a surfer.
Yeah, it's a bodyboarding is about the extent of my activities in the surf these days.
We talked about Sneaky Surf, which is one of Steve's businesses, and he was looking at... We talked about the Apple Watch becoming waterproof, and it got me thinking about the phone. I call it the phone watch in a way, but there's Apple Watch and there's a few other varieties. Yep. Samsung have got one.
Yep.
How are they selling? I sort of heard that they, not quite a flop, but they didn't sort of sell as well as they'd predicted.
The wearables market is massive. So in terms of whether it's watches, whether it's fitness trackers, that type of mobile technology and what it does for lifestyle is the key element. I mean, we sell a lot of those types of devices through our business, and I think it's a growing part of the market. You know, we talk about, I saw an article this morning in the press about Apple potentially bringing out a new smart eyewear.
Mm.
You know, they tried that once before, and I think that was a bit of a flop. But I think the reality is that this is the whole sort of wearable, mobile, VR in particular, I think is an area that is just exploding in terms of technology, because it creates new opportunities. I know VR, for example, we think a lot about the gaming environment for VR, but you know, there's some incredible work done in New South Wales, I understand, through VR with firefighters, to put them in a training environment that is real life, wearing a vest that heats up when you're close to a fire in the VR world. And the integrated sort of a fourth dimension of VR is phenomenal, and what they can do for training and for a whole range of other activities other than just what, you know, we see a lot of at the moment, and that's the gaming world. But so there's a lot of these sort of virtual technologies, mobile technologies, devices, wearable devices that are changing lifestyle and changing the way we do things in business.
Are people buying a watch instead of a phone, or do they come hand in hand?
No, they come hand in hand.
Excuse
mostly.
The pun.
Yeah.
Nice one. Yeah, no.
It's a bit slow to pick up on that.
Well, I didn't do it on purpose. I realised after I'd said it, yeah.
No, typically they're attached, or because they have an app that typically runs on a device, there's a relationship between those devices.
So are you fine? Is there any sort of pattern that people are getting a smartphone, a watch, and an iPad, or is there any sort of trend?
There's a lot of work being done at the moment in Telstra, for example, about building smart bundles that make sense for customers.
Smart bundles.
So that, you know, bundling a tablet and a device and a plan and data and all of those pieces together. Yeah. To meet a consumer need and a business need. You know, for example, plans We've just had a refresh of a number of plans in Telstra from a mobiles perspective that incorporate Microsoft Office 365 subscription as well as a mobile plan as well as cloud storage. So for business customers that want to work remotely and want to be able to connect to their business and to their customers while they're out and about, these solutions are really important, including a tablet. So lots of those sort of, they're not hard bundled products, so you don't literally walk in and say, I'll have one of those. But the ability to connect these products together in ways that are meaningful for businesses and meaningful for consumers is really where we're heading with all of this at the moment.
Steve, what's your prediction on the future of businesses using all these different devices? Will we end up having five devices each, or will we end up just having one?
I think that we're in a transition phase, and for a long period of time we'll have a few devices, like you say, the wearables. But I think in the long run the phone will evaporate. Okay. It's getting smaller and closer to our body, and it does more, and it'll eventually either enter our ears as a little device or just a watch, and then it'll enter our clothes and enter our body through nanotechnology. So all technology gets smaller and closer to our bodies until it enters our body. So that's getting a little bit Star Trek for you.
It is a bit scary.
but certainly in the next little while, I think that the phones will be usurped by watches. And I think that the killer app won't be your fingers in your hands, but it'll be your voice in your ears. So voice recognition software is getting very, very good now. You probably threw Siri out or Cortana or Google Now because it was terrible when the first time that you tried it. But what we need to remember is that digital technology doesn't operate the same way as old industrial technology. So if Siri, you know, was as good as a four-year-old, a year later it's not as good as a five-year-old, it's as good as an eight-year-old. Yeah. And then, you know, a year later it's as good as a 16-year-old, and then after 5 years it's like a PhD who understands every single topic. So that's what I think we'll see: voice activated software that we wear, and the phone will evaporate. In any case, it's not a phone. I don't know why we call it that. We touch it 200 times a day and make about four calls.
That's a good point.
And I think, you know, further to that point about the development of voice activated technology, the new Pixel product, I don't know whether you've seen it, Steve, or had a bit of a play with it, but the Google Assistant that sits within the new Pixel product has incorporated some of the artificial intelligence that clearly Google are working on in other applications. And it's a really smart interface and learns about how you search and how you utilize those search functions in your daily life, booking appointments, booking flights, all of that sort of stuff, to start to tailor that voice activation, that voice searching capability to how you use the device and what things that you are looking for. What are your preferences in terms of, you know, I like Italian food. You know, it'll start to develop a search functionality around how you interact with it, which is amazing, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. We hope you're enjoying eavesdropping on an interesting conversation. We have our guests here in the studio, leading futurist and business technology expert Steve Sammartino, business brain Barry Markoff. Do you like that, Barry, as your
it's
title?
It's a great one.
You
great
like that one?
We should start a campaign on that.
You and your campaign.
I don't think they would say that at work, but we'll do that.
and Telstra's our own Peter Bennett-Hullen. We are talking about fresh business technology and what's going on. And in the break there, oh goodness, if you could, we talk about this eavesdropping, this conversation, which is great, and when the ads are on, it continues. So not to let anyone listening miss out on this interesting conversation we're having during the ads, I was chatting to Steve about Lego. Now, what? Tell us about Lego. What are you doing with Lego?
I've done some crazy projects.
Yeah.
So I met this kid on the internet, a teenage boy, which sounds way dodgier than it is. He was reading my blog, right? Relax. It's fine. He was reading my blog, a smart self-taught physicist from Romania, right? And he wanted to do a little space project. So we put a Lego space shuttle into actual Earth orbit for under $2,000 using technology that would have been several million dollars just a few years ago, 10 years ago. And so you can see that on YouTube, just Google Lego space shuttle in space. And that went viral and we had millions of views. And then we also built a full-size car out of Lego with 500,000 pieces, with an engine made entirely out of Lego, and the engine runs on air. And we crowdfunded that on Twitter. And this was just to prove what you can do in a tech world. You know, an eco-friendly car out of toy pieces with two people who lived on opposite sides of the earth collaborating over the internet. And that, oh, gee, it might have had 9 million views on YouTube now, but that got a lot of media coverage and was on the news. I even did interviews on CNN and Fox and all that. But that was just to show what's possible, you know, just connecting the dots.
Yeah.
Not collecting the dots. You've got to connect them.
It actually works. It actually does run.
It drives.
It does.
Imagine
drive.
If Steve's involved.
It's amazing.
That would work.
Of course.
He's there behind pushing it.
No, I am not. It's the real deal.
Steve, how does it, you mentioned CNN. How does Australia compare on the world stage?
I think we've got the minds on the world stage. I don't think there's any country that has an advantage over any. You put the tools in front of humans and they can do anything. Where we are not as good on the world stage is we don't have the infrastructure that supports startups. There's a lot of rhetoric, but there's not a lot of real support, you know, taxation benefits or other benefits to get people off the ground. So that's, we've got the minds, we've got the potential, but I don't think we've got the infrastructure support because we have the... we have too many resources for our own good, which means that we rely on historical industries, you know, like mining.
Peter Bennett-Hullin, we were talking about small business also in the break for those small businesses. We have a lot of small businesses listening to this show and how technology used to be the relevant, I suppose, to big business and corporate business. And it was out of reach for a lot of small businesses. But now it's come down that small businesses can actually access this technology.
And I think not only can they access it, you know, Stephen and I had a quick, like a 3-second conversation in between the Lego car conversation about the fact that small businesses are more reactive or more proactive, in fact, in terms of adopting some of these opportunities through technology. They don't have to present to a board to get approval. And now that the costs are coming down for these enablers of business through technology, we're seeing small businesses and medium businesses really start to adopt some of these opportunities around productivity improvement, around getting out and becoming more visible to their customers, digital displays, and there's so many fantastic opportunities for small business now that they can get their hands on and that are easily integratable into what they do, that we're actually seeing the take up in small business far outstripping what we would see in the larger end of town at the moment.
Steve, do you get a lot of requests from small businesses for your advice?
I get a lot of requests from individuals and big businesses. Small businesses, not so much. I don't know why that is, but it tends to be entrepreneurs or big business that tend to approach me. I don't know why.
There's an opportunity there. I think it'll grow. I think it's growing. Yeah. I think it's starting to shift. I think it's early, and I think it might be generational. You know, as we mentioned earlier about the word disruption, that people find it scary because they don't actually understand now what it means. But it's like any words change. Like the word gay doesn't mean what it used to mean 50 years ago. So these words are shifting, their meanings are shifting, and when people start understanding that, they might embrace
it. Well, I think the notion of disruption is a really important one because those businesses that that are enabled to disrupt their markets inevitably are winning in those markets. So small businesses that can do something different to create a new way of working in their industry are the ones that will be successful. Real estate agents that can get outside of their shop, have somebody walk past a for sale sign and straight away pop up into their mobiles the information about that particular property is an example of the type of disruptive event that changes the way people interact. So you know, small businesses are really cluing into this and they're far more nimble and agile and prepared to take risk. It's a question of how they access those opportunities and where they go to be informed about what they can do with technology. And that's what we do.
Yeah, Barry, you would have noticed that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think I was listening to Steve speak the other week and another futurist as well. And the most important thing that with disruption, people are now thinking about their business a lot more than they ever did. And Steve said, and another futurist both said, you must think like you're a startup. So it's an exciting time. It's harder. Things are happening all the time. But at least you sit down and there you can make good money if you think outside the comfort zone. You think like a startup rather than think, oh, I'm an established business. And you've got to think like that. I think it's a great message that Steve talks about.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Speaking of messages, Steve, you've got a tip that you want to leave us with.
I mean, okay, so well, the first thing on that idea is speed is more important than size and money. That's for sure.
Mm.
But you know, if there's one thing you need to do now in business is you got to work harder on yourself than you do on your job, right? And the reason is that what we knew yesterday just might not be as valuable tomorrow as it was. And there's never been as many ways to learn anything you want to learn on demand from the world's greatest thinkers. You just clicks away from doing it. So get out there and invest some time in yourself.
I love that, and I love the connection revolution. I like that term that you used. It really resonated with me, and I think it's a positive thing. So, again, a bit like disruption, revolution's a bit scary. Yeah. But that connection and us as humans, it really taps into that primal need of us as human beings. I really like that. Steve Sammartino, thank you so much for being
Thanks
on
for
Taking Care of Business.
Fun. Good
oh, it's good. It's good fun. Yeah. I loved having you here. Barry Markoff, always a delight.
Pleasure being here.
And I'm looking forward to seeing your name one day on that ballot paper.
That's right. We mentioned I was going to be the Prime Minister last
time.
That's
right, exactly. Yes, I'm still waiting. Peter Bennett-Hullen from Telstra, always a delight to have you in the studio. And thank you again for being a great supporter of RRPFM and Taking Care of Business. We hope you've learnt something new today and feel a little smarter. You'll find all this information from today's show on our Facebook page. We look forward to your company next Friday at 11 a.m. In the meantime, keep taking care of your business.